How did you start the Advocate? Was it a group of people that got together and decided to do that?
Well, actually, it started out as a newsletter for an early organization in Los Angeles called Pride. And I met a man who was a part of that organization. And I got involved, went to a few meetings and so on. And because I had a background in journalism, naturally the task of publishing the newsletter fell on me. So, and I saw the need for a newspaper. I saw a terrible crying need for a newspaper for gays to read about themselves, what's going on, you know, not only locally, but legally. And so I decided to try to turn it more into a newspaper. And that's when it became The Advocate. And
I always wondered, not to interrupt you, but why was it called The Advocate?
Well, we kicked a lot of names around, and that just seemed to be the most appropriate because we were advocating something, you know, and a way of life and our rights. Started out basically as a civil rights oriented publication.
What year was that?
1967, September was the first issue. The organization folded soon afterwards, and the three of us who founded it carried on. You know, technically we bought it from the organization for $1 just to be free of any debts that Pride may have had. But then we just gradually improved it. Everything was volunteer labor at the start, like most gay publications. We used to make it up on a dining room table in my apartment. The early issues were secretly printed at a company that one of us worked for, and using their offset press. We didn't steal any of their materials or anything like that, but we just used their press. Somebody made the plates free and so on. That's, you know, like Judy Garland and Mickey Rooney putting on a musical in their father's barn. That's just not the way it started.
Do you remember what were the big issues you were covering back then?
The police were always the big issue in the early days. As a matter of fact, my own arrest in a bar previous year, I think, probably figured prominently in my the impetus for the paper, you know, in my own feelings about it. And when I was tapped on the shoulder by a vice squad officer and arbitrarily arrested with 10 other people in a small neighborhood bar.
What kind of effect did that have on did you lose your job or anything like that?
No, fortunately, I had a job where I worked in I was the Los Angeles office for a scientific publication called Chemical and Engineering News. And I was a one-man office, and the headquarters and editorial offices were all back in Washington, D.C. So I was physically removed by 3,000 miles from all of my bosses, and they never contacted them and told them or anything like that, so there was no way they found out.
Are you still living in Los Angeles?
No. We now, my lover and I have a home in the foothills here, east of Fresno. After we sold The Advocate, we moved there and built a house.
When did you sell The Advocate?
Sale took place at the end of 1974.
Get a good price for it?
Not what people think. I've seen figures, one incorporated, I don't know where they got it. They published it in their anniversary issue last year that we got $1 million for it. Well, I wish we had. No, it was probably a fair price, but not an awful lot.
Was it a national publication even when you were involved with it?
Oh, yes. Yes, we went to, we got a national distributor in 1969.
How did you get news and information out of other cities? Did you know people in other cities?
Well, the paper grew out of the interest of the people that got a hold of it one way or another. And as I think an interesting point to make is that as the paper spread, across the country, and that happened very slowly and very gradually, and by mail subscriptions mostly. You could see civil rights activity spreading on the part of gays, especially the campuses, I think. Wherever anybody got a copy of The Advocate, they could see what was going on in other parts of the country, and that gays were standing up for their rights and making legal advances, progress in the courts and so on, progress against the police. And then they tried the same thing in their whole area, or their own area. So I think The Advocate worked as a catalyst. Well, this intense interest on the part of readers generated copy, you know. I mean, people send in stuff from all over the country. And, of course, in the early days, you couldn't pay anything, and we weren't getting paid. Nobody was getting paid. And the ad revenue made expenses, you know. It paid for the printer, the paper, and everything, and which, you know, as it grew, the expenses mounted because you needed a lot of paper, you needed a better printer, you needed a printer with a bigger press, you know, and things like that. And so, but everything we took in went right back out again into making the paper better. It was not a profit-making thing. I did not quit my own job until 2 years after we started the paper. And, of course, I took a huge cut in salary when I did. And then we started taking modest amounts out in salary. But and then we started hiring other people. And we got an office, you know, outside of the apartment and so on. And it just, then we started paying writers, too, in small amounts and then larger and larger. And it just gradually grew.
What do you think when you see The Advocate today?
It's different from
the one we had.
I wouldn't have gone in that direction myself. I wanted a newspaper. I think the greatest function of a publication is to disseminate the news first and foremost. We had feature material too, and I think we had a good balance. But I would still emphasize the news if I had it. You know, news in depth and as much as we could get into it.
If somebody had said to you in 1967 that The Advocate would be the probably the most, the largest anyway, and maybe probably the most successful gay newspaper in the country in 1983, would you believe that? It wasn't something you foresaw.
Well, not in 1967. I think by 1969, I certainly thought it was going to be the best and the largest. I mean, the demand was there. The demand was there. All we needed is, you know, somebody to leap in there and try to fill it. Actually, you know, I get too much credit. Our readers deserve the credit, especially in the early days, because it wasn't as easy to go out and be seen plopping 25 cents into a box on the street as it is now, you know, and to carry it home from a bar or something like that. I mean, it was their act of buying the paper that really made it.
Why did you decide to sell the paper?
I got tired.
A little burnout?
Yeah. Well, both my lover and I worked, you know, something like 12 hours a day. He worked even longer. 7 days.
Yeah.
7 days a week. We had a lot of personnel problems in that final year in the paper. And everything just came to a head. And we thought, well, perhaps we had better get out and give somebody else a chance, you know, probably come in with fresh ideas and fresh money and so on, and give the paper an impetus. But we felt that if we stayed with it, it probably, you know, would start faltering.
But it's not the same Advocate it was when you were...
No, well, you can't keep control when you sell your baby and somebody else brings it up. No, it's not the same. But you have a lot of other publications now, and many of them are covering the news pretty well. So a void was created again, and somebody else is leaping in to fill it.
Do you feel like a pioneer when people talk about the early days of The Advocate?
Oh, I guess I do a little bit, but there are a lot of other people that are much greater pioneers than I and have a lot more courage, too. I think few people don't realize, and especially, I guess, the younger gay generation, that this activity started long before Stonewall. Everybody tends to date everything as Stonewall. But 3 years before Stonewall, Pride had demonstrations, public demonstrations in Los Angeles, in front of bars that the police raided and so on. I mean, that was one of the early Pride newsletters, I think in March of 67. Reports of demonstration. So this has been going on long before. And then of course he mentioned that Madison and the One Incorporated and those people, Tangents, fought a case against the post office and right on up to the Supreme Court to assist us to establish the right to mailer for publication. So I think there are a lot more pioneers that have done important things than I did.
The unsung heroes of the early movement.
Yeah. Everybody who did anything then was took a great deal more courage than I think it does today. I'm not, denigrating the efforts today. I think that they're very good and people are working very hard. But you've got to admit that it's a little easier. I think the early pioneers have laid groundwork for the gays. And when I come to a city like San Francisco, for example, and go down Castro Street, why, I'm just absolutely amazed. I mean, you'd think there was that oppression had been completely eliminated.
But it hasn't been.
It hasn't been.
And a lot of the country, things are not so much different than 1960s.
It'll never be completely eliminated. I mean, blacks have been trying for 100 years. You can't eliminate what's in people's minds. I mean, all you can do is limit their conduct against you. I don't think you can make them like you. Maybe someday, there'll be fewer and fewer and fewer Archie Bunkers, but there's always going to be some Archie Bunkers.
Maybe the good thing about The Advocate is not that it made other people like gays, but maybe it helped gays like themselves a little
more.
That's
important. That's very important. Yeah. I hope we did that, because unless you like yourself, it's not going to be possible for other people to like you. I think gays have a lot of problems, and a lot of them stem from within themselves. And if they could learn to like themselves or at least understand themselves better, they would have a much easier time in life. Regardless of what other people do to them, it'd still be easier.
Thanks a lot.
Anything else?
Okay.
That's it.